Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we go to Fishtail, Montana to visit with chefs Nick Goldman and Wendy Reed. Their business, Wildflower Kitchen and Catering, feed and nourish the performing artists and guests who visit Tippett Rise. Dreamed and created by Kathy and Peter Halstead, this year-old art and cultural center sits on a 10,000-acre working sheep and cattle ranch. First, we visit with designer Laura Vickland of Gunstock Timber Frames, who created the new dining and gathering enclave, Will's Shed. We then sampled this season's first night's meal. Finally, we talk to chefs Goldman and Reed and find out what inspires them to cook food in remote Big Sky country. Let's hear from Laura Vickland about Will's Shed.
So food has always been a big part of Tippett Rise, and the experience of having a meal together before going to a concert has always been really important. And I don't think we were totally sure what the scale was going to be when we first designing the barn, but I think food is one of the most popular things for people who come here. So last year we had an outdoor eating area, but it's Montana, and there's a lot of wind and storms that come through, and we had a tent that sheared off with a wind event and realized it just wasn't safe to have everyone eating outside, and that we needed to honor the food a little more and give it a proper place for everyone to sit down and have a communal atmosphere that was sheltered and they could produce good quality food in it.
So what makes Will's Shed so special?
This place is actually a timber frame barn, so it's all mortise and tenon joinery, just like the old barns back in New England that you would have found. So Peter and Kathy, from very early on, when they came to us and met us in the beginning, it was because of their interest in barns and the feeling you get when you go in a barn, how comfortable that is. And so we wanted a place that was sheltered, but at the same time, we wanted to not restrict people's views because the mountains here are amazing, and a lot of what you come to Tippett Rise for is the nature. So we developed a plan to wrap half of the building in clear garage doors so that they can be opened when the weather's really nice and circulate and you can just see the mountains. And when they're closed, they're still all glass, so you still get a very good view, but you don't get the wind and you get a comfortable dining experience.
Now that we have stepped into Will's Shed, let's experience opening night. We get into the buffet line and find out what there is to eat. This is what Chef Wendy Reed is serving up.
This right here is our honey mustard chicken. We use local wildflower honey and stone ground mustard, and we cook this sous vide under pressure, and then we lick it on the grill to give it a little crunchy edge.
As we move down the line, Benji Goldman, Nick's brother, tells us about the other choices.
And today we got our barbecue, or huckleberry, I should say, barbecue beef brisket. It's a slow-cooked beef brisket. We do it over 2 days, and then we add our sweet huckleberry barbecue sauce at the end. Delicious. It's probably becoming our signature dish, I'd say.
For those who want other options aside from meat,
we do rotate our vegetarian options, but we have our pesto cream pasta dish. It's got fresh zucchini, asparagus, broccolini, and our little English peas in there as well.
So what do guests think of the food? We hear from Beverly Ross from Billings.
I had a barbecued beef brisket and this most gorgeous fruit salad that had peaches and blueberries and strawberries and pineapple. And then I had a vegetarian pasta dish with green beans and pasta in a nice light Alfredo sauce.
And how was the brisket?
Oh, it was just fabulous. We want to get more.
Then Bess Lovick shares about her food.
And I had the roasted potatoes as one of my sides, and they were wonderful, very thoroughly cooked but not mushy. Some olive oil and some herbs in there. Then I had, for my main course, I had the vegetarian pasta, which was moist and complex but pleasing. I liked it because the tastes were quite varied and it's just delightful. Light for this hot evening.
Finally, this is what Dave Kopic thinks of the food and drink.
I had a caprese salad and what else? A little pasta salad. So that was just about right for tonight.
It's super fresh, really pretty. How was it presented?
Yeah, all the salads look great. So I was just choosing between a few and that one looked really good. The tomatoes looked really good. And I had a Red Lodge ale with it, and so a Checkmate Pilsner. That was probably my favorite part of the meal.
The food experience is complete, as Sue Requesta Simply Wine does serve up fermented beverages, both wine and beer.
Because you can't have a cultured event like this without wine. We did it all last year, which was the premier season, and we're contracted through this season as well.
So what are some of your highlights?
We serve Conundrum Red and White Blend by Camus, and then we have a premium pour of Meiomi Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
What seems to be the favorite of people here?
You know, the people like the Chardonnay. This is a Chardonnay kind of place.
It's nice and warm, so it's nice and cooling, I bet.
It is. It's wonderful.
Throughout meal service, Chef Nick Goldman watches every detail. Let's hear his point of view on tonight's menu. He starts by telling us about the pulled pork.
And then the pulled pork is actually braised. It's cooked for 12 hours in a cherry, pretty much exclusively cherry Coke, for the sugar compounds to reduce and add, you know, enhance the natural sugars of the pork.
Is it local cherries?
Yeah, flathead cherries, when applicable, when we can get them. It's not always in season. And huckleberries are also what we try and use. All the huckleberries we use are from Montana. So for the brisket, we use a huckleberry barbecue sauce. So the brisket is also sous vide because it gives us that time constraint, but it's cooked for 48 hours to exactly 147 degrees. So it's just getting over medium, but it does help it because that cut of meat has a lot of fat. We could say a lot of elastin in the fat cap and then collagen throughout the muscle tissue itself. And it needs a long, long cook time for it to mellow out and basically render out properly and let some of that fat dissolve in the meat. So it's a long cook time. And then potatoes and our other sides are always kind of what we come up with on the week, what we find in town. Me and Wendy do a lot of ordering through big purveyors, but we also do every single week we go in and handpick all of our fruit. I don't trust any of the purveyors in the area to send me anything other than bulk meat and things like that. So we are hands-on with everything we buy, you know.
Well, and that's to make sure that you have the best product.
Absolutely, and we have to be thoughtful of our time frame. You know, my peaches, for example, when I'm buying them, I think they're exemplary right now. They're really good, very juicy, very flavorsome. But we have to be aware that when we're purchasing them 2 days before an event, how long it's going to take, is it going to be 100 degrees outside? So we try and be as thoughtful as possible and buy local. We are ourselves exclusively representing our friends Elevated Harvest. They're a vertical grow business in Luther, Montana, just opened up in the last year. And they have both worked up here with us, the owners at Tippett last season with us, and now they've opened their own business. So we're selling all their greens. We've got about five or six different varieties, Salanova, Frisée, Romaine, several other types of butter lettuce. And we're trying to endorse that product because it's grown literally down the road. And it's really beautiful stuff. I mean, we can walk into any supermarket in Billings and I know exactly who sells what specialty ingredient. You know, the particular Albertsons on 24th, there is the only one that sells fresh red chilies. And they're the only people that do calamari besides seafood of the world. So we know, I know my mushrooms, I know that I can downtown on Central, I can get at the IGA or Albertsons down there, I can get oyster mushrooms and shiitakes. Now they're more common, but 5-6 years ago, these were a rare ingredient in the Billings food scene, so.
Well, I love that you've given some of these secret places that you actually secure your ingredients.
We go to all the natural grocers. We support Lucky's, Good Earth, as many places as we can that are doing good food and promoting that agenda because, as you can clearly tell, I'm a little bit passionate about this. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. So we like to socialize with our purveyors and get to know them and get their trust because their trust is paramount to finding the best ingredients and is really quite a unique relationship with a lot of joy. So, for example, last night we served a dinner and the dessert was a rhubarb cake that we did. And the rhubarb is from a local master gardener, 75-year-old gentleman. His name is Wayne Burleson and Connie Burleson. And Wayne is probably the most enthusiastic person I've come across in the States for what he does. And we love to sell his stuff as well. So he'll bring me greens and fruits that he has and herbs, lots of a multitude of ingredients. But he grows this fantastic Red Mountain spinach that I've never really dealt with before up until about a month ago. And I was blown away by it. And just at 75, he's out in the garden picking. And he's still as enthusiastic as he was probably when he was 25. So it's always that rubs off on you and then it makes you excited again for something and excited to give it to your guests and also simplify it in that sense. When something is that pure or that loved, that love is invested in the production and the, you know, the caretaking of those products, I think you should leave it alone.
In the next part of the show, we go to Chef Goldman and Reed's culinary studio in the heart of Fishtail. In the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky, we are at Wildflower Kitchen and Catering. Chefs Goldman and Reed have made a mission to share their culinary knowledge by taking on students. Christopher Pasesnik, at 15 years old, is one of those students. Let's learn about Chris.
I was born in Roundup and then have lived here about 4 miles outside of Fishtail for the rest of my life. So, yeah, so far.
How long have you been working here at Wildflower Kitchen?
Maybe two and a half weeks, right?
And what have you learned in these last 2 weeks?
Everything from how to use a knife. I'm still not very good at it, but I'm getting there. Different names for things, uses of things, and a lot of different food-related word for it.
Techniques.
Yeah, what do you do for Wildflower Kitchen?
I'm mainly dishes and stuff, but also some of the food prep, just running things around for everybody. I basically keep kitchen from falling behind.
Well, and it's really, really important because it helps the chef and the catering crew to have someone like you to get that all together. So have you learned some new food?
One food that I found, cornichons. They're baby gherkins, and they're amazing, but they don't taste like a pickle, which I've never liked pickles, but I liked these, which was weird.
This is what Chef Goleman says about the culinary program.
We're working with three local children, Chris being the youngest of the trio, to give them a crash course in not only work ethic, showing up, taking responsibility, and for Chris, every single student, we focus on a particular issue with them, where they need maybe, or we see that they could develop, giving him true responsibility. If he's not on top of his work, then our kitchen falls behind during our busiest hours and being pushed to the brink of exhaustion. But he's also learning what real life is and how it is to grind out and make a dollar for yourself in America. And that takes a lot of energy, and that hard work pays off. Kids are getting the opportunity first and foremost to be around some really exclusive musicians, which Chris himself is a music producer, and he often brings us songs, which are, it probably, I'd say his skill set is more in line with that, but this is gonna round off his knowledge of the workplace, how to interact with colleagues, how to show up on time, how to be present, how to be focused. Kitchens are all about focus. It's minute by minute intensity, and Chris is absorbing that as quickly as he can. And the other students that we work with are a couple years older, but they in turn have similar issues where we have to develop their culinary palate, their awareness for guest experience, because first and foremost, we're really a hospitality service. Up at Tippett Rise and what we offer, Wendy and myself have decades of experience dealing with customers in front of house and back of house. We see the whole picture, and I think we can develop them as full young people to that extent to give them a balanced benchmark of what proper hospitality and service that's beyond, let's say, we want to amplify Montana-style service and humility and respect of our landscape, but we also want to elevate. We work at a very prestigious event center, and part of these guys learning on what they can really do and what they're capable of is recognizing the guests they're around and elevating their standard of service and their present-mindedness to basically deliver a beautiful, beautiful food production, beautiful food products, and then couple it with a fantastically warm, embracing, humble service, but with passion and dignity. I believe in the young people we have, and we want to feedback. That's the oath we took as culinary students on the first day of school, and that's one of the only things I take very seriously from culinary school, aside from the basic learning, was that oath. It's important to me and Wendy that we teach what we know and that we help the young kids around here expand their culinary mind. Our local supermarkets do the best they can because the consumer isn't that interested in fresh figs or beet greens or serving Italian fresh pasta or, you know, working with particular cuts of meat that we don't always see. So that's what we want to embrace them with and give them that knowledge and say, I can think wider about the world. I'm not so in one mindset. I can live in Montana and breathe in Montana, but I can dream bigger.
So where did Chef Goldman's passion for cooking come from?
I started in the industry when I was 15 years old in London. Probably younger than that. I mean, a bit of an entrepreneur. My dad's an entrepreneur. He pushed me from a young age to be active and out on the street. And things are a little different now in 2017. Kids don't have that same prowess to get out there and, you know, ride a bike till the end, till it's dark and come home. And London's a very different environment than Montana. I started when I was 15 at Fox and Goose Pub in Alberton in the Hanger Lane Gyrery, which is the biggest roundabout in Europe. A very big Fuller's Pub. And I used to polish brass and do service. I'd get in the dish pit. Basically got sort of an education there very quickly. I mean, it's impossible to name it. I think it's about 30 kitchens now, but I started there, and then from that point on, I took a few more cooking jobs. My dad had a cafe in Northfields in Ealing, where we're from in London, well, in close to where we're from, that he ran for a while, and I helped with that when I was about 15, 16 as well. It was more service was my first experience in the industry, service and dishwashing, like what Chris is up to here, and learning that side of things, getting the hard knocks in, being punished, and the industry was very different then as well. I mean, it's changed a lot in 15 years. In England is a very much more stern environment than America in terms of the cooking environment. There's not as much respite or patience for people that can't keep up. It's not the same policy where you have to have three formal warnings. If you're no show, no call, or you're not doing your job, you're out the door, and you learn that quick. From there, I had come to America later on when I was in my late teens and taken some cooking jobs throughout Billings. I then moved to Portland, Oregon, and went to culinary school.
How did you end up in Billings first?
So my mom is American and my father is English, so I'm a dual citizen. So I've had a connection with Montana my whole life. We've been coming here since my little brother Benji was born in Bozeman. We've been coming here since we've existed. My grandfather moved to Billings in the 50s after World War II and sold Monarch ovens. So in a weird way, we have a slight connection to the industry that grandpa was a stove peddler, as he used to call himself. And mother met dad traveling in Bora Bora, and they went back to England and they had me several years later. And we had a strong presence in America. So I eventually ended up in the States because I feel like there's more opportunity for young people here. And the passion that I possess, I think I can succeed far quicker, especially in the industry of food. The pay is very, very minute. For example, after culinary school, I went back to London and staged in many Michelin star restaurants and tried to work in that field. And it was impossible to pay my bills because the basically you're working for free for a resume, which I wish I'd stuck with because it would have given me even more fundamental skill and knowledge and impetus in the industry. But I decided to come back to the States and adapt culinary school, and then I went back to England and did that. But I went out to Oregon for 2 years and went to the Cordon Bleu there, where I studied and I trained hard. I had a full-time job as sous chef when I was there. I worked in about
that was in Portland
Portland Oregon. Yeah, I worked full-time as a sous chef. I also worked at about four of the restaurants whilst I was there. I ran a wine bar.
What were some of the restaurants?
Portland City Grill. I worked exclusively at Thirst Wine Bar and Bistro, which had two locations. I think my owner has just closed down, actually, after about 15 years. And then I moved to Washington for about a year and worked on the coast there at a beautiful restaurant and learned a love of seafood. I learned how to butcher, how to fish on the ocean.
Which restaurant was that?
This is the Depot Restaurant in Seaview, Washington. Owned by a lovely couple, sort of borderline fine dining, but he taught me a true love of seafood. So we'd have, it's where I learned the most about fresh food, really, was there, because they'd have mushroom foragers come in every morning and they'd bring us morels, chanterelles, king boletes, black trumpets, things like that. And then they would bring in fresh fish. We'd have a lady shop every morning with a pickup truck flatbed full of bushel of clams. And we do sturgeon butchery, taught me how to use sturgeon, how to play with salmon, how to respect fresh clams, all these ingredients, shellfish that we don't have in Montana as much. And so that's where I learned a lot about seafood. And then I moved back to Montana for a while after that and worked at Bin 119. I worked at the Crown Plaza as a banquet chef. I worked at Bones for a bit because my friend was running it, another Englishman. I moved down to Denver, and that's where I met Wendy. She was running the British Bulldog, which is the best English soccer bar in town, and, you know, fancy that. I showed up a little bit tipsy after a long day in the kitchen, and we cut some potatoes together, actually, was how we met.
From Colorado, the couple came to Montana to run the Big Yellow House B&B.
Our family B&B came available in Absorkey. Mom had got remarried, and we decided to move back up here and keep it occupied so that someone was managing it and running it, because she couldn't do that. We had bought a family cabin out here on the South Fiddler Creek about 25 years ago. And when mother finally left England, she was divorced from her father for about 10 years, she finally came home to look after her mother, who was at St. John's in Billings, who me and Wendy was a big part of our life when we moved up here, to go see Skip, my grandmother, every week and check in on her. And that was one of the things for me being here as well was important. She was at her end of her life. We moved up and the B&B was vacant and we ran that for about 3 years. And that is where we met Peter and Kathy Halstead. So it's still operational. I encourage people to go book rooms. Our lovely friends bought it, Jane Olchogi and Nancy Chase. And they're doing a splendid job of restoring the Victorian-esque quaintness that the building needed that we could never give it. So they're doing a good job there. So we sold that and then we've moved into our new premises about 2 years ago at what was the Muddy Lamb in Fishtail. Was a pottery studio originally, and we've transformed it into a culinary studio.
Chef Goldman now shares how Kathy and Peter Halstead came into his life.
They found us at the Big Yellow House. They met my mother many years ago. She has a business in Central Asia in Kyrgyzstan. She has a store in Helena, and she employs women in Kyrgyzstan to produce felted products. And they came in years ago and met her, and then they give me a bread knife, please, chef. And then they bread knife, please. And then they came in to meet Paula and they liked her stuff. And then they showed up a couple years later when they were more seriously invested in the area. Tippett had not yet been built or any of it. It was all still sort of a discussion, I believe. And they came back in and met us and they threw a lot of rugs on the table and said, we're really interested. And I didn't believe that they were going to buy it all, because no one comes into Absorkey and looks at 3-4 rugs in a day. And to be fair, we talked about French food because Peter and Kathy had lived in France for a long time. And we sort of discussed our culinary training, both of us, Wendy and I, is in French-based cuisine. All of it is, really, if you go to culinary school. And so we have a deep love for her. I at least do, more than Wendy. She's more of a Southwestern California girl. She likes the chilies and keeping it fresh. But I definitely revert always back to my French training. It's very important, I think. And we ran that for 2 years, and Peter and Kathy came in, and looked at those rugs, and then a week later they called back and said, would you like to do a dinner? And we said, okay. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves in for. And it kind of started from there, and we did a lot of more fine dining prefix stuff for them where they'd bring 10 guests in to the Yellow House. That's what we did a lot at the Yellow House. We did rooms, and then we'd do breakfast, which was my specialty at the time. Being English, that's what we're famous for, is a good fried breakfast. And we developed that into fine dining a little bit, where we do 30-person prefix dinners, where there's no choice. It's what we decided to cook. And that went over quite well, but it was never busy enough. And Peter and Kathy gradually, as the years went on, brought us into the fold more and more. And we've been basically private chef, well, I would say private chefing, but private caterers.
Are you the exclusive caterers for Tippett Rice?
Absolutely, as far as I'm aware. yes, we are. We've been working, Peter and Kathy have been very sweet to us. I'll tell you this is the way I look at the scenario, the relationship we have with them. We've cooked for them for about 5.5 years, and I don't know how many meals. We've basically done a different menu for the first 5 years, every single event we did. So we're talking about thousands of events now, and every single one is different, and they never ever in that whole time have bothered us to say, look, this is what I want and I must have it. Never ever one time. They completely explicitly trust us to work around their guest needs, who the guests are, step up to the plate and make sure that everyone's taken care of. So for example, our menu that we're cooking as we're talking to you has a multitude of different dishes, vegetarianism, a touch of veganism. We've got a lot of different guests on site, and obviously artistic nature means people have more artistic preferences and they're more careful about what they put in their body. And we specialize in that. And I think that's what we really offer them in a way. And love and energy. Everything we do in our kitchen down here and prepping is meant to build our foundation. We're not stuck to one menu.
You do have performers from all over the world and yes. From both coasts who have different palates. How has your training helped you in creating the menus for these people?
So Yevgeny and Alexander that were here, well, last week, both of them live in London. So they both lived, I believe Yevgeny's lived not far away from where we're from for the last 20 years. So we have a similar understanding of cultural food. Like London is a mecca. It's often misrepresented in America as a desert of food and bad teeth and warm beer. And it's opposite. London right now is probably one of the best cities in the world for high class dining and people pushing the envelope. The pressure is on, the competition is rife. There is very little room for error. Whereas here, I feel like it's much more gentle, you know, on what people aren't doing good food. So I think knowing that and knowing where they come from, the availability of good ethnic cuisine, having an understanding of multiculturalism. I've traveled the world, and not in a silly way, like we were blessed to do that. I'm honored really as young people that my mum and dad met traveling, so we were talking about it yesterday actually in the car. And it's we've been afforded an opportunity that most people haven't, but I'm grabbing it with both hands and I'm hungry and I want it. And that's what we say about what we teach them here. So it's that's the part of it. I understand kind of that big world scenario of how people view food from other countries and how they might. I think we want to give the Montana experience, but make it approachable in that capacity. Not be completely country and only prime rib every other service. We want a bit of beef. Well, how can we manipulate that? How can we showcase beef in two different ways? We could do a beef cheek braised dish, a beef short rib dish, or showcase a nice loin, you know, of beef. Or last week we had venison on the menu, so we're serving fresh venison with a little venison demi, and then we're doing it with simply like Duchess potatoes and haricot verts.
Do the performers have special requests when they arrive?
It could be more specialized than they ask for, but yes. Some of them, they obviously have dietary restrictions. Like I said, creative people take care of their bodies, probably a little bit better than, you know, the average person, because their bodies are their tools. Just like me, my hands are my tools, their hands are their tools for playing the piano or the violin, and their mind and their body has to be fresh. Yeah, they like a lot of fresh fruit and vegetables. I noticed that a lot of them are either vegan or have very specialized needs, or they don't want certain elements of food that might make them unhealthy or feel bloated. Not red, big red meat eaters, which is ironic because we're in cow and lamb country here. I think that they are a pleasure to work with, and we get to see an inside aspect that no one else really sees except for the management at Tippett, where we deal with them on a daily basis, and it's lovely to meet them and have people from around the world, because we can get kind of introverted living in the backwoods in Montana. And that's what Tippett does, is they bring people here that challenge us, challenge them, challenge the environment, challenge the thought process of what it is to be in Montana and be an American and enjoy classical music and bring that genre to the forefront. And they do that well. And they do it with a great deal of dignity and honor and just simplest. They want simplicity, although none of this is simple to do food-wise because we're on top of a mountain. So me and Wendy were shopping till 9 o'clock last night in Billings at 12 different stores because we source everything ourselves. Every bit of fruit, we buy purveyors for big meats and products like that, but for the most part, our pasta, our beetroot, our beet greens, my meat, most of our select cheeses, everything is purchased by hand so that we're hands-on with it. We're not allowing someone else to dictate the quality or the level that we can offer.
Well, you've covered some of how you approach food, but you also provide a beautiful buffet for the guests who come to the performances. How do you plan for that?
Well, it's gotten a little bit more complex this year because we're doing three different services a day, technically, up at Tippett when it's open to the public. We have a pastry selection in the morning and coffee and things like that to get you going, get you feeling alive in the morning, because the musicians, I think, need that. And that's what we noticed what we weren't doing last year, that they might want to bring something on site themselves to help saturate that need. So we said, okay, let's get some good European pastries on the menu that people can relate to in this sort of field. And then we go into a lunch service and then the barbecue. A lot of prep. I mean, non-stop working. We've been doing probably 17-hour days for the last 3 weeks before the center opened, and before that, quite a bit of mise en place prep. But that's what it comes with pushing yourself and being self-employed, especially in the food business, hospitality. It's non-stop. It's never-ending. We go home. These guys, our staff, leave, and me, Wind, and Benji go home and spend an hour or two each night when we should be asleep discussing what our intentions are for the morning, our order of events, who is available, what VIPs are on site, and what their needs are and how we can excel. And that is something we try and specialize in.
Let's not forget that the other half of Wildflower Kitchen is Chef Wendy Reed. We hear her version of how they met and learn about her background.
I met him in Denver, Colorado when I was running a British pub, and we came together because we both have a love of soccer and football, football as they say over in England. And I saw him on the patio and I started speaking to him in Spanish because I thought that he was Mexican, and then this British voice came out and I was like, oh, I had to turn my head a bit. And then, you know, we got into the conversation about how we had both gone to culinary school and had both been in the culinary industry for over a decade at that time, that we had two very similar but very different experiences with food and hospitality. So we met and we started talking about tournées because back when I was in high school, I used to compete in knife skills, and one of the knife skills was this tournée cut. He says, I have my tournée knife in the car, and he went out and got his sack of knives, and I said, I have a sack of potatoes. I went back to my kitchen, pulled it out, and we sat there and drank pints, as you know, the British do, and that's how we fell in love, is talking about food, having a passion for the same things, and bringing each of our own experiences.
Tell me a little bit about your culinary training.
Oh, well, I started at a very young age I'm originally from Los Angeles, California, and I worked at a couple little places. I got involved with a program called CCAP, Careers Through Culinary Arts Program, working with lots of local chefs. I got to work with Wolfgang Puck and big catering events for stuff like the Oscars and art walks. And I also was going to Indian Hills College at the same time. So I got my first degree in college in food prep before I graduated high school, because if you're a high school student going to college, you can go for free. So I got that, and then I got a scholarship as well to Johnson & Wales University. I went to the Denver campus. I studied there and actually got a job with the university working in admissions and training new students, and I was basically a collegiate ambassador, part of the collegiate ambassador team there as well. That led me to meet loads of people across Colorado, where I worked at various prestigious country clubs, prestigious hotels. I worked in low dive bars all the way up the train there, all over Rocky Mountains, from Vail all the way down to Denver. And then I had my own pub, the British Bulldog, in downtown Denver, and that's where I met Nick. I worked there, and the rest is what Nick said, where we came up here for the B&B and started Wildflower Kitchen in 2015.
How does your partnership work? You are both dynamic people. How does it all work out in the kitchen?
Well, I like to say that we balance each other out in a yin and yang kind of perspective. He's salt, I'm pepper. I'm a little bit spicier, and he likes the... I'm a little bit more sweet, he likes a little bit more sour. So our palates balance each other out, and our creativeness balances each other out a lot. I do all of the sauce work. So Nick might be I call him the deli slicer as a joke, because he'll slice up all of the deli prep and then I'll make a sauce, and that's how, our love of food comes together.
And what are Chef Goldman's final words?
We're working today on Wendy's birthday. We are pushing each other to get this season the best season we've ever done for Tippett. And I think that if the guests hear this, I'd love to see them up at Tippett and give us a chance. If you can get concert tickets or book a tour late season, but we never know what will happen. We'd love to see you up there and dine with us and give us a chance, because we really are motivated to feed everybody and feed them well and do the right thing, basically.
Well, Chef, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for coming down to our culinary studio, and hopefully we'll see you up there again this season, and we look forward to everyone coming up.
Flavors Under the Big Sky has been produced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this program, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.